All right, everybody, we got another pre-race interview set up for you here. This is Jesse Ziegler with Quinn Cody on my side for the Dakar Rally Daily Podcast. And we're calling in via Zoom call to Mr. Toby Price. What's up, Toby?
Hey, guys, how are we doing? Just, sitting here in Dubai, and it's about a bit after 10 o'clock. And, we're not too far away from heading to Saudi Arabia, so it should be good.
Yeah, we're inside a week, basically, before the race kicks off, I think. 8 days or 7 days, depending on where you're at in the world.
Yeah, so it's about 8 days. So, we're coming up on Christmas Eve tomorrow morning, and then we'll take off from here around the 27th of December, and then, basically get into it, do a bit of pre-running on the bike, make sure everything's all good and final checks, and get signed in. Get another nice little COVID test and go from there. So it should be good.
I think it goes without saying you've had probably the most hectic racing schedule of anybody I've ever watched on social media in the last year, basically. But give me like a rundown where you've been. You just posted something on Instagram, like what your last few months have been like.
Yeah, like dabbling around a little bit with everything with two wheels and four wheels. It's been a pretty hectic 6 months. So I've been out of Australia since the first week of August, and flew straight to America, and we had some testing and stuff there to do. Actually caught COVID on the first 2 days I arrived in the States, and I dodged a bullet everywhere else in the world, and then landed in the States and straight into it. It was like, wham.
Sorry about that.
So yeah, we had all that, been cycling around all of US and doing some riding on the new rally bike there and some testing and training. And then we basically flew out straight from there to Morocco. We tested in the last round of the World Championship category race there. As soon as that was finished, I flew straight here to Dubai and then started testing again straight away on the new bike and trying to get it all ready for January. And in between that, I flew back to the States and raced the Baja 1000 in a spec truck, and then flew back to here to Dubai and been testing again since pretty much until 2 days ago. So it's been a pretty hectic schedule the last 6 months, but it's been good.
That's wild.
That is wild.
So what does your setup look like there in Dubai? Do you have an apartment there or stay in a hotel and like, you know, you guys?
No,
nah,
we're in a hotel at the moment. So, it's Studio One, hotel here in Dubai. And, we did basically the same thing, coming here in Dubai last year, and we spent basically, 3 months here. So when I came back to Dubai this trip again, checked in at reception, everyone there knew me by my first name, and you're back again. Yeah, sweet. It's like it feels like it's my second home at the moment. So, the only bonus bit to it is fresh sheets and new towels every day, and that's about it. It's the same thing for breakfast, and hooking in and going right into June, so it's cool.
Yeah, man, yeah, you guys, you've been living the hotel life for sure, because, I mean, I think most all you guys were here in the U.S. for close to a month, and I think you stayed in the hotel here the whole time, and so it's been a while since you slept in your own bed.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen Australian soil and my own bedroom, and it's been, it's been 6 months of just hotels, really, so it's... definitely been a big change in the whole rally program, and I guess it's a change for everyone around the world everywhere. So it's just we can't really take the risk of flying back to Australia at the moment. Still going back there, we have to quarantine. I think they've changed that rule a little bit now that we may be able to do home quarantine, but literally on the news yesterday, I see it's starting to fire up again. So I don't even know if I'll be going home back to Australia. I've got a flight booked, but I don't even know if I'm going home after Dakar yet. So we'll have to wait and see. If not, might have to come and crash at your place again, Quinn, and cruise along there for a bit. So.
Well, it fits into the origins of the nomadic lifestyle that the Dakar Rally was inspired from, I guess. You are living it every day, not just when you're racing. You're living it literally every day. So going into the race, I guess you're prepared for the not being at home.
I mean, it's got to be nice to be there.
Yeah, exactly. definitely well prepared for it. And yeah, that's it. Like I say, being on the road for so long, the last 6 months, it's it feels like normal life now for me, really, at the moment. So it's hopefully, well, we don't get the nice hotels and luxury of things like that in the Dakar Rally. So if you do get a camper, then you are quite lucky to get that. But majority of it is sleeping in a tent and things like that. But they've been pretty harsh on us on the first day, straight into a, I think it's like 650 kilometer liaison for a I think it's about 12 kilometer special stage for sorting us out, and then straight into a marathon stage. So it's they're throwing us in the deep end real quick.
Yeah, we've been talking with that with Johnny Campbell, was just here. We talked to him about it, and it seems pretty aggressive start to the race, shaking you guys up. You looking down a few stages for strategy on how you're going to start that first special, or are you just going to, you know, wing it like we think you're going to?
Yeah, pretty much. I pretty much wing it every day, really. Yeah. And it's nice to hopefully the main goal this year is we just need to make sure we cross the finish line. And 2021 wasn't so kind to us, but unfortunately that's part of the sport, and that's part of the Dakar Rally. So it's just we just have to make sure we just get a good qualifying position and get ourselves set up. Like it's like the first lap of motocross or supercross. It's not all one on the first lap or anything like that. It's 12 days of racing and 8,000 kilometers. So a lot of things can happen in that whole time, and just need to stay consistent and be there for that second week and see where we're situated. So it's just take each day as it comes. And first goal is, to make it reach that rest day and then evaluate where we're at and go from there.
Quinn has not given me any information on this because he's got, he's restricted on telling me how great the new KTM rally bike is, or if it's, got problems. He won't tell me anything because he's, contractually obligated not to say that, I guess. But I figured you'd tell me how it is. So you got to tell me and all the listeners, how's the new bike? What's going on with it?
Yeah, look, 100%. I'll tell you all the truth for sure.
That's it. That's why I got you on.
Pretty much locked in the same as Quinn there a little bit. But in all honesty, like for sure, the new bike, it's taken a little bit of time to develop. Like it's not anyone's fault inside of KTM. It's just the way the world is now at the moment. There's no access to parts. There's no access to materials to make new things. And the last probably 3-4 months, pretty much since we started in the States, so we've made a lot of progression with the bike. And we're all really comfortable on the new bike and that now. And looking forward to seeing what this new bike will do in Dakar. So it just comes down to the rider and being us then. So it's, you can't blame the equipment. The boys are definitely working hard and putting all the work into where we need to develop the bike. And it's been good. So we're excited for it.
It's an ambitious project, I'd say, trying to build a new rally bike anytime, but especially with global issues.
For sure. Man. And I mean, they're, you're building the bike from the ground up, and it's really, KTM has dropped the old trellis frame that's gone. And so it's a new twin spar, it's very similar to the new motocross chassis. And it's for sure challenging building any kind of bike from the ground up, and let alone a rally bike. So it's
It's going to be exciting to watch that for sure.
So how about, you got hurt pretty bad last year at Dakar. Was it your shoulder? And how's that doing now?
Unfortunately, it was a little bit more damage than what we thought was done at first hand. And it took like kind of 3 surgeries to get it all sorted back in January when I got back home in Australia. So it took a little bit longer than I was hoping and expecting to get sorted. I didn't really actually get a clearance to start riding till around June. So it was a bit of a long period and trying to do rehab and stuff to get movement back in the shoulder. But it's feeling comfortable on the bike now. And still for sure, like there's still a few tight points and areas it just didn't feel quite comfortable in. And as long as I don't go sailing off any massive big dunes, then my shoulder should be good. So I just think, might kind of like pop a little bit if I come to a sudden halt. It's pretty much back to about 90-95%. So yeah, to get that extra five out of it, I'm sure we'll stretch it out in those next 12 days of Dakar coming up very quickly.
This is somebody who won the race with a broken wrist, so.
Yeah, it'll be good after Dakar. So that's your rehab, right?
Exactly. I shot myself in the foot with that one race, so I think an injury now, like, I can never complain about it or say I'm never going to race with an injury because
you ruined it.
They say you've done it once, so you can do it again.
Why do you need both your arms, Toby? You did it with one arm once. Like, why are you complaining?
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was a wild time, that one. So I kind of learned my lesson that 12 days is a long time on a bike with a broken bone, and it's a long day, long 12 days with just even being 100% healthy. So, I don't think I'll put myself through that pain again, that's for sure.
If you look forward to the stages coming up, you said something about sand dunes. They talk about a lot more sand dunes this year, different quarter of the country they're going into, maybe a little more open terrain, we've heard. What's your sort of scouting report on the race this year, stages coming up, you think?
Yeah, look, honestly, it's the information we've got is pretty much what everyone's got all around the world for the race coming up. So it is a little strange sometimes. They do go, when they first start, like, announcing the course, and it's going to be 80% dunes, and, the rest of it's then going to be 20% of, like, it looked like other terrain being out in the open and stones and everything. But as it gets closer to the race, then it kind of goes, 60% dunes and 10% sand, and the rest is in stones. And now we're a few weeks out, it's more sounding like 40% dunes, and we're all in kind of no man land at the moment with it. And I think that's, they're trying to keep it as secret as possible so that it's fair for everybody that enters the race. So as the good old days of Matt Men and everything like that are all out the window when we get the road books in the morning. So it's cool. It's definitely a new aspect of the rally sport, and cool to see how it all comes together now.
Perfect. Yeah. And so it looks like the ASO dumped the six tire rule. So you guys will now get a new tire each day, or what? You happy about
cheering,
that?
Cheering. Yeah. 100%. After my episode with zip tires and race tape. they got rid of that rule for us. So it's which is good. I think it's good that they're trying to make the rally sport a lot safer and come up with ideas. But when basically they say there's six tires for a 12-day race, that's your only point of contact to the ground. It's like, well, one hand you're trying to make race safer, and then you limit our tires. It's like it doesn't add up to the safety clause that you're trying to come up with. So it's cool they've dropped that at the moment. And there's definitely some more talks in the future of some things to try. And I think at the moment, like 2023, they may be trying to implement a speed limit. But for myself, I'm a little bit against that, because at the end of the day, we're all racers and we all want to go flat out. And it's the thing is with it, then we have to monitor something else. It's like if it's 140 Ks or 150 Ks, that then takes your focus off the road book a little bit more, takes your focus off the road, like what's ahead of you and what you're seeing. So it's good that they're trying to come up with different things, but it's also sometimes some of the ideas are a little bit far-fetched and go in the wrong direction for it as well. So we'll just have to wait and see, but it's great. We've got 12 fresh tires ready to go for the race, that's for sure.
Are they pretty receptive to your input if they come up with like a speed limit idea or something like that as far as a racer? Are they looking for your feedback on those rules?
Yeah, look, in some ways they are, but apparently the speed limit rule is already kind of like written in the SUP regs and the entry forms and stuff that are going to be coming in 2023. So we've heard a lot of teams are not really too keen on it. So everyone's kind of like, I think by the sound of it, rallying together to try and eliminate that and pull that out of the race. But I think the only way they're going to try and make the rally sport safe at the moment, the level has just lifted so much in the last probably 4 or 5 years.
For sure.
Everyone's got the right team, got the right equipment. Everything lasts the 12 days. There's no exchanging engines and stuff anymore. But I think the only way it's going to be like kind of slowing us down is that, yeah, if you take away the GPS and basically give us back to the good old days of, if you really get lost and we will never find you for the next 2-3 days, I think that's when people then will go, yeah, I'm not going to sleep out here in the middle of nowhere. So we might have to back it down a little bit and just be a little bit more accurate on our caps and, yeah, take our time a bit. But at the moment, it just feels like a sprint race. It's from day one. It's wide open, full gas. And if you don't do that, you'll find yourself at the back of the pack pretty quickly.
I think maybe they need to get rid of all the motorhomes in the bivouac too, and personal hey. Chefs. And
right? Whose side are you on, mate? You'd be quiet over there.
Quinn's out here.
I only say that because I never had a motorhome and I slept in a tent the whole time. So I'm still a little bit bitter about that.
Yeah.
Quinn, are you looking for a job? Come and set my tent up every night. Like, it's no problem.
Fluff his pillow.
Put it right next to the generator on the big truck.
Yeah, usually, perfect. That's usually that'll where be mine the was. Best spot for the best sleep. funny. No, we do get some luxury with that side of it. That's for sure.
Well, deserved.
Yeah, I mean, you need it. You know, you think about it. I was explaining it to someone the other day, and this is basically like if you ran the entire Supercross season back to back every single day for 2 weeks, and that was it. And you miss one day, you're you don't qualify one day, you're out of the whole thing.
You cannot win the championship.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And 100%. It's like that. When I used to do motocross, I thought 30 minutes was so long on a motorcycle. It was like, didn't feel like it was ever going to end, or 20 laps of a supercross race. It was like, oh, I don't even know if I can make that. And then when you say now I've got to race 8,000 kilometers, it's, to have that nice bit of a comfortable bed at the end of it. Luckily with the teams and everything like that, it does help at the end of the day. And yeah, it's like back 18 rounds of supercross back to back to back, and in 12 days straight, really. So it's pretty strenuous on the body, that's for sure.
Yeah, the intensity isn't just a trail ride either. It's the speed you guys are carrying. You know, we see it, we calculate it out every day during the coverage. It's intense racing every day.
Yeah. 100%. That's it. Like from my first one I done in 2015, it was it kind of still had that spirit of an adventure style race, and like that was like kind of the goal, was just to make it to rest day and cruise through the first part, kind of enjoy the experience of it, and then kind of really get geared up for that second week. Whereas, like I say, the level it now that KTM and Honda and Yamaha, everyone brings to the table. It's as soon as you click your bike into first gear, if you're not pinned the whole time, it's like I say, you're going to be at the back of the pack pretty quickly. So it's cool. It's good to see for the sport and the level what everyone's grown to, which is rad.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, like I said, I remember when I first started, and, you know, it was really kind of Mark Marcoma and Cyril Dupree, and they were going back and forth. And those were the two guys that, you know, we're going to win the rally.
There were two contenders.
Yeah. And
yeah,
you could ride a decent pace and be top 10, no problem. And to where now I feel like you nearly have to be capable of winning a stage to finish top 10 in the rally these days. Cause there's so many guys that are so competitive and just pushing so hard.
And putting in the work.
Yep. Yeah.
In off season.
Yeah. That's it. Before you had a 50-50 chance of who was going to win the race. Mm-hmm. So it was Mark Homer and Cyril Dupree for many years. And then, since pretty much 2015, when it's all made that bit of a switch, you have now like a handful, there's probably even more than a handful. Like it's, 12, 13, 14 guys. So it's, you've really got to have good, consistent days for the whole 2 weeks of racing, really. And whereas before, you could kind of count on somebody changing an engine back in the day and they lose 30 minutes and you could be 35 minutes behind and then you're 5 minutes back off the lead. So it's you find now that if you lose 30 minutes, then chances are of you being back on the top of the step, it's going to be very unlikely. But anything's still possible. It's not over until that checkered flag on that very last day comes out. But it's it's good. It's definitely a hard challenge for us now, and you got to stay there every day.
Yeah. You know, so I know you guys have had some changes with the team and whatnot. What I know, I saw the other day, I saw a press release that Mark Coma is now going to be working with you guys, and so and then new team manager there also this year.
Yeah. So we've got Mark Coma coming back to help, guide us a little bit, and I think with him in our corner with winning five Dakars, it's pretty cool to have him still a part of like the KTM group, and hopefully it'll bring us a bit of extra knowledge and a bit of understanding of where to kind of situate ourselves in each of the stages and things like that. So it's cool to have him part of it all, and Norbert has now taken over the role of management with the KTM rally side, and it's been really great. He's pushing so hard to improve the new bike and being a part of the development stage of all this. And I think what we got at the moment, I think we're bringing a pretty good game to Dakar 2022. So it's an exciting time to head for sure. But it's rad to have Mark back with us, and we look forward to seeing him in the next few days.
Cool.
Yeah, clearly the KTM guys are going to be chasing that victory again.
Yep.
Got away from him a little bit.
And then Jordy's still working with you guys on road books and stuff like that. Is that kind of the focus with Jordy?
So Jordy's running all our testing and rally kind of program stuff for all our road books and any other like small bits of information and help that we need. So Mark and Jordy have been teammates for many years, and so the experience we have inside of KTM coming this year, it's quite strong. So it's like you were saying, Jesse, it's Dakar's got away at us in a couple of years there, there's no hard feelings to it there. Honda's brought a very strong game for the last it's been 7-odd more years, I think. Yeah. So it's they've got the program worked out, and at the end of the day, it's KTM always had their foot in at the front, and we need to try and find that again a little bit at the moment, but it's good for the sport. Like it's 18 years in a row that KTM won, amazing. It's huge, massive record that I think will probably go untouched for a very, very long time. But it's also good for the sport too that Honda and Yamaha are making a big push, and Hero makes more seats available on the start line, and still gives it's like I say, there's 12 to 15 guys that have a chance to win the race. So it's not really putting your money on two people anymore.
That's cool. Without that investment from those other guys, it'd still be probably between two guys at the top team.
Yep. For sure.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. With KTM's push, like 18 years in a row, like it's like I say, it would be two out of the four guys that are on KTM's side. Yeah. So it's to have all these other teams in the sport, it's for sure, for the first one that we lost, definitely hurt the most.
Yeah.
The streak came to an end, but it's the second one wasn't too far off it either. So it wasn't too much of a lucky break for them. It's proving that they've got a good program and things are working. But KTM's jumping, putting their foot forward and wanting to get moving again and get this title back in their hands. So it's cool to see.
You got a couple more years to keep cracking down on that program because you signed another 2-year extension, right?
Yeah, so another 2-year extension with an option of third. So hopefully in the next two Dakars, I get a decent result to hopefully extend the third one. Hopefully I don't know how the body will feel in 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time, but I'm hoping I can get another 6 out of me on two wheels and, stay on two wheels and stay in one piece, really. And that's the main issue I've had I've only crashed out of two of them, so it's nothing too major. I've got 5 Dakar trophies in my cabinet, which is a pretty good little stack. But, hopefully we can extend to that third one and keep going. And I know that third one's possible, and that's why I keep signing up for it. So we'll see how we go.
It's amazing to see your, motivation to keep chasing after all the racing you're doing, the schedules, sure. the trophy trucks, you know, flying here and there. And you're still like, yeah, no, I want to go like 3 years, you know, on the bike. My next goal is get that other contract and then keep racing and keep racing.
Yeah.
Keep
a lot of guys are like, man, get me in a trophy truck and get me off this thing.
I'm sick of this. Being on this bike for 800 kilometers in the morning.
You've been spending a lot of time in four wheels now. So, are you looking to, you know, a future, possibly a Dakar on a, in a car or something like that?
Yeah, look, that's honestly the reason why I'm doing some four-wheel stuff. I don't want it to come as quickly as most people probably see it or from the outside looking in. But, yeah, I want to just have my foot in the door a little bit that if I ever do get a chance to go and test the car and they call me, I can take my whole suit and set up and kit and actually climb in the car and know what button to push to start the car. So it's I don't want to be a complete rookie and then really put people on edge and be nervous that we're letting they go out and drive a car that's never even driven one of these things before and cruise around. So, yeah, like I say, we'll wait and see. But it's like I say, just you don't know what the body will feel like in 2, 3, 4, or 5 years' time. But it's, yeah, like I say, I know that third one, it's definitely possible. We'll close this year when we'll – running in second outright on the day we crashed out, and we're only a minute off the overall lead. So I still know I've got it there. And the day I think if I start finishing back in 10th or 12th, then maybe it's the time to put the helmet up. But we know it's there, and hopefully we can just get another good result and keep two wheels going. But it's a vicious circle, mate. Like you get one and you go, oh, I could retire and I'm happy. But then you start thinking, well, a second one would be pretty good. And then it's a long shot. I don't know if it'll happen. And then next thing, second one comes and you're like, oh, well, two's nice. A third one would be good. It just never ends. It's just a revolving wheel that keeps going round and round. And it's just like, yeah, you're like a hamster in that wheel just still running, like chasing that, each time. So
chasing that trophy. Well, we have a proposal for you. If the truck thing doesn't work out and the bike thing comes to an end, Quinn and I, we're going to get a big rally truck, like a Kamaz truck, and we're going to do the podcast live from a race truck every day. And you could drive that.
Help. Sign me up. Yeah. We'll take turns. We can all have a drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go for it.
We can podcast while we're driving.
That's our ultimate goal with the podcast, is to finance a rally truck.
Yep.
Yeah. Rally truck. Yeah.
At least a support
we got
truck.
All the equipment we can store in the back and big batteries will be good to go.
Yeah. So if you can throw some sponsors our way, that would help. We need some sponsors.
Perfect. Now we'll start Great working liner. On it. Let's start drawing up that contract for another, probably about 3-4 years away. We'll be good.
Yep. Competitive contract coming. Awesome. Well, man, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time before the race. I know the holidays are coming up and you haven't even been around your family for, geez, months, but we really appreciate you chatting with us again. You're always so cool to talk to about the race. You got such a gnarly racing, you know, spirit in your blood, and it's just fun to talk about. And we can't wait to watch you race and maybe connect with you and the team during the race sometimes to get some insight from the pits and see how everything's 100%. Going.
So we'll try and see if we can. Well, I'm sure Quinn will be in touch with us along the way, and maybe on the rest day there we can connect up or something like that, and
sure,
give you the first week lowdown of what's all going on and see what's happening with the race. So I appreciate for having us on, and it's always cool to chat. So hopefully we'll be talking in about, what is it? We'll be about 18 days away at the finish line. And hopefully with a trophy in our hand.
Yeah, a big trophy. From the podium. That's what we're rooting for you, Toby, for sure. It's
Appreciate it, boys. It's awesome.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon. Toby Price, everybody.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thanks for the chat.
Cheers. Yeah. Good luck.
You.
Hey, everybody. Jesse here with a quick message for our title sponsor, Climb. Climb makes some of the most innovative and functional off-road, adventure, and touring apparel on the planet. It's been epic adventure and race-proven time and time again. How do they do it? Pretty simple, actually. Climb builds riding gear for how and where people like us want to ride. That means premium materials throughout and high-tech construction. It keeps you comfortable. It is massively functional, and it lasts. Check out climb.com. and find the gear to take your next ride to the next level. Today's show is presented by MotoMinded, the Colorado-based innovation lab for motorcycle goodies galore. From plug-and-ride LED kits to super clean wiring and switch solutions, MotoMinded has parts that work. Nothing shows this more than their Rally Moto Kit. The Rally Moto Kit is the only bolt-on race-proven rally tower and fairing kit for your dirt bike that is made in the USA. This gives you a full-on rally navigation tower with all the real estate you need for gadgets. Plus, it makes a great platform for your lightweight ADV build, and it's easily removed so you can always go full enduro again. Check out the Rally Moto Kit now at motominded.com.